Foxconn has committed $1 million over the next several years for Wisconsin's public and private colleges to come up with visions for smart cities. The competition will launch later this year, and prize money will be awarded for innovative ways that cities can transform themselves. Here is Foxconn's head of U.S. Strategic Initiatives, Alan Young, who spoke at a ceremony to unveil the competition earlier this month at UW Parkside.
We're now talking about connected and autonomous vehicles and highways. We're talking about flying drones, and soon I can guarantee you we won't be just talking. We'll be riding those flying cars. Imagine that. It would not be centuries away. I would say it would not even be decades away. It could be as close as 5-10 years away.
So this competition got us thinking, what is a smart city anyway? And are those flying cars really possible? And that soon. We're breaking down smart cities here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, Jason Nelson is Executive Director for Partnership Engagement at the Smart Cities Council that's based in Reston, Virginia. It's a network of companies dedicated to helping cities become more sustainable, livable, and workable. Jason, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
So there are some misconceptions surrounding the idea of a smart city. We just heard about flying cars there in the clip. Can you give us an overview about what defines a smart city?
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's almost a misnomer to think of it in terms of just limiting it to cities, right? It's smart communities, whether it's a city, a county, a state even. You know, we think of it in terms of broad definitions, and it's not flying cars and jetpacks. I think that's something that kind of gets people a little bit off track with what this really does and how the technology works. You know, we see it as an opportunity, as you mentioned, to create more livable, workable, and sustainable places for all residents. You know, if you look at the world population, it's expected to grow by about 2.5 billion urban residents by 2050, and those folks are going to need new places to live, and you know, we can't keep doing the things that we've been doing before, and you know, we've really passed the point where standard processes, you know, just don't make any sense anymore, right? It doesn't make any sense to put in more coin-operated parking meters. So, you know, we need new technology to create new ways of living, and that's going to put less of a strain on our resources as a community and provide an opportunity for growth for these cities and communities.
So you just said the T word there, technology, which is really the underpinning of what goes into these smart communities. So what is the role of technology, and how much technology do you need, and is it in every facet of the community?
Yeah, I think technology is going to be the way that we relieve the burden on our resources. It's going to be the way that we create more efficient government, and that we really fundamentally transform the relationship between the civic government and the relationship with its citizens. You know, if you look at the way that some cities are doing that currently, in Boston, they're posting a report card every day. So they're saying out to the citizens, here's what we're doing, you know, here's how well we're performing or not performing, and it's all there for everybody to see. You know, I've talked to some companies that are transforming the way even their parks and rec departments are performing and creating new services for citizens. I mean, imagine being able to turn on the spotlights at a baseball field if you're, you know, it's getting dark, by using an app and being able to create new services. So, you know, these are things, you know, people are taking pictures of potholes and being able to submit them in to get filled, and it's getting into a queue, and the Public Works Department is being able to fill them. It's just relieving those really uncomfortable moments of waiting in DMV lines and doing things in a different way that just makes a better experience for everybody involved.
Are we ready to do things in a totally different way?
You know, I think we have no choice. You know, when you look at the population growth that's coming, I mean, it's the equivalent of building the city of Chicago in somewhere in the world every single month for the next 30 years. I mean, that's a monumental task in order to be able to accomplish it. And you know, our water resources, it's going to put an extra 55% strain on our water resources, an extra 60% strain on our food resources, an extra 80% strain on our energy resources. So we have to do things differently. Whether we're ready or not is another thing, but we're starting to see leading cities take that first leap. You know, cities are all around the world starting to build their smart city plans. They're starting to organize themselves differently and starting to build that community-wide plan for how they're going to do it differently. And well, I think that that's a really, really good thing.
Madison is building such a plan. It was chosen as one of 22 cities to participate in this smart city collaborative. Other cities, New York, L.A., Washington, D.C. What are some issues all these cities have in common?
Yeah, so I was fortunate enough to speak with Racine Mayor Corey Mason 2 weeks ago at our Smart Cities Week event out in Santa Clara. And, they're doing a lot of really good things. They're starting to build that plan. And until you bring the various departments together, until you start to get that community-wide focus, along with your local utility, along with the local university, and really get that city-wide perspective across every department, it's really hard to move things forward. And it's so hard because, if city services are often a matter of life or death for folks. And if we're not, putting that level of importance on it, we need to. And so, the residents of that community, have really strong leadership and we're looking forward to working with them.
Jason Nelson is our guide. He's head of partnership engagement for the Smart Cities Council, talking about what are smart cities, smart communities. You can join in with your questions, your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Do you have innovative ideas that could make your community more livable? Are you excited about the possibility of smart cities expanding out of large urban areas? You can call in, email ideas at WPR.org. So, Jason, as we talk about smart cities, we immediately think of the big cities, the New Yorks, the LAs, the San Franciscos, the Chicagos that have a whole lot of assets, a lot more ability, you'd think, with technology to be able to weave that through the public sector, the private sector. Are we missing the boat here, though, on smaller cities, perhaps like Madison?
Yeah, we've seen some really good innovative technologies and innovative uses of the technology in smaller and mid-sized communities. If you look at Chattanooga, Tennessee, they've built out their own fiber network. We're really excited about working with Cary, North Carolina, who's building out a city data platform. If you look at Birmingham, Alabama.
What is a city data platform?
So they're taking city data from all of the various departments and bringing it together so that it's usable. I think that the danger in collecting data from different applications, say transportation data, is that it can live inside of a data center that's only accessible by the transportation department. And unfortunately, if the health care department doesn't understand or public health services don't know that data is available, nobody has access to that and nobody can use that to make really good decisions. And so by bringing all of that data together, you're going to be able to create real actionable intelligence for the city so that they can make better decisions and hopefully provide better service to their residents.
Well, with all that data comes a whole lot of integrity with how to handle it. Sensitive data, going across multiple platforms, public and private. Is there risks involved with these smart communities?
I think that's something that people are definitely concerned about, but I don't see that as a huge obstacle, right? Personally identifiable data is such a very small part of this equation. Anonymized data, things like number of cars on the road, that's not going to be personally attributable to anybody, but it's just going to help our city planners make better decisions about where are the traffic flows, where are the pain points, how do people move, from one place to another and get around the city. So, things like that are and be able to help understand where are there, bit more emissions, and being able to make better decisions about city planning and city greenery. Things like that are going to be really important as cities make decisions on how they're going to grow and how they're going to take advantage of this technology in the future. So privacy and you know, public safety and protection of that data and security of that data is absolutely important. It needs to be baked in from the start. But we're not looking at credit card numbers being a part of this program. It's really just anonymized data for the most part.
Technology is core to these smart cities. We're learning about the inner workings of smart cities here on The Morning Show. This, as Foxconn Technology Group recently announced, it would invest $1 million over several years to encourage Wisconsin colleges and universities to dream up innovative plans. Jason Nelson, our guide, head of partnership engagement for the Smart Cities Council, you along in the conversation, 800-642-1234. We'll pick it up after a news update on the Ideas Network. Singapore emerged top in a global smart city performance ranking in 2017, followed by London. It's according to a study by market researcher Juniper Research, the Global Smart City Performance Index ranks the top 20 global smart cities. New York, San Francisco, and Chicago came in third, fourth, and fifth on the index. We're breaking down what smart cities are here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and Jason Nelson stays with us. He's Executive Director for Partnership Engagement at the Smart Cities Council. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Is integrating daily life with technology a good thing? Would you feel overwhelmed with your data being collected? Are you a student interested in developing smart cities and participating in Foxconn's competition? What are your ideas for smart city moves in your community? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So, Jason, what does the implementation of this new technology in a community look like? So for communities interested in really getting started, taking the next step, how do they start? What should they do?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think that, I think the first thing is that they have to have the right headspace for it, right? It's not a destination. You're not going to wake up tomorrow and we're a smart city. It's a journey, right? And it's more than a journey. It's actually a race. As we're seeing with the Amazon's HQ2 competition, mm-hmm. I guess, where cities are competing for that. That's happening every day, right? That's happening every day around the country with different companies deciding where are they going to locate? How are they going to participate? And so communities are waking up to the fact that they're in that race and they need to be able to provide the sort of relationship that citizens are asking for, that better relationship between the citizens and their government. And so this is a part of that. So as cities start to get their plans together to start to make this happen, it's important that they're breaking down the silos, that they're thinking as an integrated single city approach. And our advice to cities is to, first of all, come together, start to build that citywide vision, but then start locally, right? So think big, start small, and move fast. We want them to be able to, as they're building that plan, really use it to address the problems within their own community. If inclusiveness is the big issue, then start to put in programs that are going to address those issues and solve real problems. This isn't technology for technology's sake, right? We started the conversation off talking about how it's not flying cars and jetpacks. It's real solutions to real problems in communities. And so you start there, think about those problems and figure out ways that the technology can fix them.
But aren't there lots of upfront costs to transform cities with technology? I could see a smaller community out there saying, how do we find the money for this when we can't even come up with the money to fix the potholes out there on our roads?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, and that is a challenge, and it always will be a challenge, I think, with communities. But as you think about the ways that communities are spending money right now, a lot of times there are efficiencies to be had, and there are new services and new opportunities to be had, things there's an investment vehicle called P3 financing, and that's public-private partnerships. That's what the three P's stand for. And it's really working with the private investment ecosystem and the companies that are within your local community to create new opportunities for investment. We're seeing that in Detroit, where General Motors is getting together with the city of Detroit and building new services and new transportation offerings within the community. They're footing the bill because there's a new incentive for them to do so. And the city, all they have to do is be able to help provide that support to help leverage those new initiatives and provide the opportunity for their citizens to participate. And we're seeing that all over the country.
So for a major corporation to thrive in a community, they need that community to rise to the occasion with them?
They do, and that's why it's a partnership, right? It's a public-private partnership. If you look at new transportation opportunities, right, creating new car sharing services, creating new busing services or new last-mile, first-mile services for the disabled or for veterans, these are things that, the private companies need access to the data on those services or promotion out to those citizens that need to take advantage of those services. And so it's really bringing those opportunities together to help solve those problems for the citizens that requires both the private investment and the public participation. And so that's where the opportunities really can be unlocked and create a new transformative relationship.
What is the smart city approach to the sprawl that happens in so many communities, where communities just get bigger and bigger and bigger, resources get scarce? What do you do to that extent?
So we did a survey of 553 different community and county managers over the last couple of years, and transportation issues were number one or number two in over 95% of the responses. So yes, transportation, I think, is a huge issue. I think we're going to start to see, and we are starting to see, a lot of really innovative new opportunities. And Ford, one of the partners of the Smart City Council, has really got a lot of great ideas and is taking leadership on how they're going to be providing new services for citizens using their vehicles. We start to look at connected and autonomous vehicles and the opportunity to use new and innovative multimodal transportation to be able to get there. There are a lot of new solutions coming. It's not flying cars and jetpacks, but it might be autonomous services for your vehicle.
What about the social climate in cities as you transform with technology and perhaps move away from the manual use of driving buses with a bus driver, for instance, and those relationships perhaps go by the way? How do smart cities grapple with that?
I think it's a really good question. We like to say we want to innovate to include, right? So it's not about making sure that we have these services, these more efficient services, only in the most affluent areas. These services need to solve the problems of all residents, and part of that comes in with workforce retraining as well. We want to create new job opportunities using this technology that provide service and support for the technology, new tech jobs that are going to be sustainable and developing new growth opportunities for the communities in which they're in. We've actually seen the opportunity with these jobs that tech jobs from smart city technology actually have a 50% uplift over traditional infrastructure projects. And so, these are good jobs. These are well-paying jobs. These are stable jobs, and these are the tech jobs of the future. So we think that communities that get on board with this are actually going to be providing better services and opportunities for their residents. So maybe there won't be one person driving the bus, but there will be a number of people that are going to be servicing the bus and the data that comes from the bus and providing new opportunities that come from those new services.
Talking with Jason Nelson, he's Executive Director of Partner Engagement for the Smart Cities Council, gathering your insights on what is happening in your community in regards to incorporating more technology into more smart community building. 800-642-1234. What are your ideas for smart cities? What priorities should your community place in developing smart city initiatives? Is this money well spent, and where should it come from? You can call in at 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Jason, millennials are beginning to move into these large urban areas, including communities that are transitioning into smart cities. How does this new residential influx affect infrastructure?
Yeah, I mean, there's a significant strain on some of the current infrastructure, right? If you look at the grade for our American infrastructure, it's not good in a lot of places. I think I've seen a D+ is the grade that's been given a lot of our infrastructure. And so we need to create a new opportunity to do that. And a number of the partners of the Smart City Council have actually gotten together to create federal legislation called the Smart Cities and Communities Act in order to do that. And so we're hoping that we will be able to see investment in infrastructure here in the next couple of years. And there's a significant opportunity to create a better community for those residents that are coming into these communities. And it's not just the urban communities. As the population continues to grow, though, we will be creating new urban communities across the country. And so it's an opportunity for everybody to participate. Even small towns are getting into the act, and they're able to create new services using the technology. Something as simple as parking meters, I mentioned, using non-coin operated smart parking systems that just create better experiences for everybody.
So this Smart Cities and Communities Act, what is the threshold for this type of legislation, and what does it do?
So the legislation has, there are actually two bills right now. There's the Smart Cities and Communities Act and the Streets Act. Between the two of them, there is bipartisan support for this legislation. I think that infrastructure is something that everyone realizes we need to invest in and create the base for those new opportunities. The acts are seeking to help provide that foundational support for the communities that are looking for this type of investment. That together with the Smart City Council's own Readiness Challenge grant that we've developed over the past 2 years, there are a lot of resources for communities that want to get involved and want to participate. And I would encourage anybody, if they in local government that wants to learn more, to go to our website and find out more about our Readiness Challenge grant opportunities and how they can get involved.
So you really have to kind of think out of the box. There are, out of the box beyond taxpayer dollars, there are grants. You talked earlier about P3 financing. But do cities really need to figure out creative ways to get the job done in order to develop their cities in new ways?
Yeah, I think what it takes is strong leadership, and that's the hard part, right? Is being able to bring all of these constituencies together. It's all of the various departments. It's changing the mindset from I work for the local Department of Transportation to I work for the city of, and building that community, and even beyond just a local community borders. It's not just I work for the city of or the county of, but I work for everyone that's in this regional area. And so if we can build that mindset and start to build plans in a community mindset, then things become possible. Resource sharing becomes possible. People start to understand the ways that they can participate and all of the efficiencies that are gained by that broader community mindset. And having that strong leadership means that, they're reaching out to the local private sector, their local utilities, the local universities to come together and create those new opportunities.
With this new technology and with the data sharing, it also brings an element of transparency to government. Is there a benefit in that, do you see, in terms of bringing smart cities online and into the fold?
Yeah, that data is going to be the sort of critical piece, right, that makes it all possible. If you look at the way that New York City has been able to, grow a number of their smart city initiatives, they've actually developed an advertising platform based on a number of old telephone kiosks and payphone kiosks. And so, they're able to create new revenue opportunities using that advertising opportunity and the data that they're able to generate from all the eyeballs that are passing by on a regular basis. So, yes, that's going to be a really critical part of it. And leveraging that data to create new opportunities, whether it's new opportunities in transportation or new opportunities in advertising or parking, having access to that data is just going to create so many new ways that the residents can engage with their daily lives, whether it's a smart parking initiative so that you can pull up on an app and know where there are parking spots available before you even leave the house, so you're not circling the block over and over again, trying to find that parking spot, congesting those city roads, burning more fossil fuels. So this is a great opportunity just to create a better system for everybody.
Well, we get so focused here in the U.S. on our own country or even on our own community in our own state, but this is really an international movement. The government of India has already begun a program to create 100 smart cities across India. Do you see potential for us to learn more from what other countries are doing on this? Are other countries way out ahead on the smart city thing?
Well, we've seen definitely federal leadership in Europe that around a lot of the climate change initiatives. We've seen India's challenge and leadership from the federal government. And even just north of us in Canada, they've actually created their own challenge for cities that want to participate. We'd love to see something similar here from the federal side. And we're hopeful that our leaders are going to realize that they're, going to fall behind if they don't. I mentioned that it's a race, right? It's not a journey. It's also a race for smart city technology, and the U.S. has so many really innovative tech companies and a culture of entrepreneurship. We're hopeful that there will be that here coming here and that leadership coming from North America and the United States specifically. But, it's easy, always easier in autocratic governments to be able to get started, but it's a much more lasting system when it's been developed from the ground up. And that's why we're hopeful that the U.S. is going to take that leadership.
Are there any cities around the world that you really look to for guidance as we take the next step here in our communities in the U.S.?
Well, the city of Dubai has done some amazing things and actually created an app that has engagement points for all city services within a single app. Everything from paying parking tickets to anything, anything you can think of, water bills, all of that is done within a single app for their community. And they've actually been able to, their measure of success is actually a happiness index. How happy is the local community? That's their measure of success. And so, they've got to focus all around that happiness index and wanting to create a happier citizen. Hmm. I think that's something that we are starting to take a look at as well. And there are cities that are borrowing from that initial outreach as they start to model their own plans and programs.
International Data Corporation recently reported that spending on smart city technology is expected to hit $80 billion globally this year and $135 billion in 2021. A number of municipalities, cities like Madison, they're trying to adopt new applications and technologies to help their communities evolve. Is this happening where you are? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Jason Nelson is with us. He's Executive Director of Partner Engagement for the Smart Cities Council. What are your ideas for smart cities? Let's hear them. We'll be back after this news update on the Ideas Network. Foxconn is committing $1 million over the next several years to what's being called the Smart City, Smart Future Initiative. It's going to start this fall. Wisconsin's higher education community is going to be able to compete for the funds Foxconn wants to turn good ideas that surfaced during the competition into better ways for living, working, and traveling. More details on the competition are forthcoming in August. Meanwhile, we're getting our bearings on what smart cities are here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Jason Nelson is our guide. He's Executive Director for Partnership Engagement at the Smart Cities Council. Your questions, your ideas are welcome. 800-642-1234. Do you live in the Madison area? How do you feel about becoming a smart city? Are you excited about the possibility of smart cities expanding out of large urban areas? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Al joining us from Greenfield. Hi, Al.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Ethan, what about dumb cities? How about walking and biking? You keep talking about parking meters. The last three times I tried to use parking meters in the city of Milwaukee, they did not work. Can you put a slot in for a quarter so I don't get towed away?
So Al, you're thinking more in terms of walking, biking, and more low-tech initiatives to bring along cities. Jason, what do you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is the danger here is that we're creating, we're not bringing all of the cities on board, and we want to see more of these types of challenges, and I think that the challenge grant process is a really good way because there are no losers in that, right? So cities that participate start to build their plans, start to develop that leadership for how they're going to embrace technology in the future and reinvent that relationship, even if they're not the winning idea or not the winner, certainly are going to see significant improvement as part of that. Cities need to understand that there's a new opportunity here. And with that new technology coming in, it does create opportunities for residents and citizens that may be left behind and are going to need some more support and are going to need more handholding or, technology that might not work properly. These are all certainly possibilities and dangers that we're going to have to go through, and some of the pain in developing this technology means that sometimes new processes, new change means it's not going to work perfectly every time right out of the box. But to not move forward with it and to stay focused on the coin-operated parking meters rather than, a better system, I think just is short-sighted and misses the boat. You know, we've got to go through that process to get to the better future.
But I think Al also brings up this point that not everyone walks around with a smartphone in their pocket navigating their world with apps. Are we going to be leaving some people behind here who aren't on board with creating a very high-tech lifestyle?
That's certainly a danger, and I think that that's one of the things that communities need to address as part of it. But it's also going to create opportunities to provide better services and measure and understand where those gaps are. If you don't have any gaps, if you're not measuring the data and you're not understanding where you have good coverage and good service and where you have communities that are falling behind and that are already being left behind today, you're not able to solve the problem. You're not able to reach out to them. You're not able to address their concerns and their problems. And so, what we're talking about is a transformative process that can at least measure and understand where they are and reach out to them accordingly.
So what is the role then of colleges and universities here? What's the relationship between tech developers and cities and all of these institutions of higher education?
Yeah, I mean, I think that our higher education institutions are the core of being able to help provide innovation in a lot of these local markets. I think we're seeing a lot of local universities start to build innovation centers and innovation hubs and work collaboratively with their local companies in the area in order to develop new products and solutions for their communities. There are certainly a number of solutions that may not have as much of a product a profit potential, but have a real power to transform their communities. And oftentimes we're seeing these universities as being the vehicles for helping develop those and bring those to market.
A lot of people are concerned about the environment around them, preserving the environment and climate change. So in the future, is it possible for smart technology to be included as we look at the ecology, as we look at the environment?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at something as simple as water, one of our partners, Itron, who creates water meters, is actually able to do a much more efficient job. And in South Bend, Indiana, they actually had a program that saved the city $120 million using those smart meters and created much more efficient water flows. They were able to measure where they were getting waste from the wastewater and water systems. So, you know, I think that this technology provides an opportunity for a much more efficient use of our environment and environmental resources. We want to see lower emissions. We want to see a more sustainable world, and we think that the technology is going to be the way to help make that possible.
Let's bring in Mary Kay now from Kenosha. Hi, Mary Kay.
Yeah, good morning. I have four suggestions. The first one is our jails need to have drug and alcohol counselors, a social worker, a food court, and more Uber jobs. The second one is transportation. We need pedal bikes and pedal cars. They're for exercise. Okay, you'll use less drugs and alcohol, and you'll lose weight. The third one is food-growing buildings. We need to start growing food, okay, like other countries already do, like, you know, greens, tomatoes and greens, things like that. The last one is less lighting. We need to have sensor lights. Like when you walk past something and you absolutely need a light, it goes on. Other than that, why do you need a light on 24 hours a day?
Mary Kay, thank you so much for bringing those to the table. Let's start on the last one, lighting. What are smart cities doing in that area?
So Mary, I love the ideas, and I love that. I hope you get active in your local community and start to, you know, create opportunities to make those changes happen. I think that that's the spirit that we're looking for here. Lighting is a core part of it. If you look at smart street lighting, a lot of communities are replacing the traditional bulbs with new LED lights. And as part of that effort, it actually creates a 50% improvement in or decrease in the amount of energy that's being used. And so that savings is actually something that cities can put use and leverage to put in additional technology, whether it is shot spotting gunshot detectors or environmental sensors in order to measure air quality and air flows. They're actually able to create dimmable streetlights to decrease light pollution and create additional energy savings, so that they're putting in so much intelligence in these, and traffic cameras is another part of the technology that they can put in to count traffic flows. So there are a lot of opportunities just using your smart streetlights to be able to create really interesting technology and more data that can be used to create better services for citizens. That's a very popular on-ramp for smart city technology within different communities.
Let's bring in Miranda now in Madison. Hi, Miranda.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I think that part of the definition of a smart city is a city that takes care of all of its citizens. And in the volunteer work I do, I noticed that a lot of the poorest among us have no transportation. It's a huge problem. And I just wonder if we couldn't put in something like a light rail that could be free for the entire city to use.
Miranda, thanks for the call. So, Jason, she sees a holistic approach to smart cities and transportation rising to the top.
Yeah, so in 2016, the city of Columbus, Ohio, won the Department of Transportation's challenge grant for, it was a $40 million grant that was matched by some additional funding from the local community. And one of the reasons that they were selected and that they won is that they took that inclusive approach. We say we want to innovate to include. One of the problems that they solved was that in looking at transportation data, they realized that in some of their less affluent communities, it was impossible. It would take over 40 minutes one way for a mother to use public transportation to get to any pediatrician. So that meant that it was over an hour and a half round-trip journey, not including the time of the appointment, in order to be able to get to and from a pediatrician. And that was just unacceptable. So they were able to create new busing systems so that they were able to provide transportation solutions for those less served communities and really create a much better connection to some of those areas for those underserved. So we completely agree, and I think that that's a hallmark of leveraging the technology to include.
What does a perfect smart city look like in the future, look like to you?
That's a great question. I don't think there's ever a perfect perfect city. I think that it's about, as I said, thinking big, starting small, and moving fast. I think that a city that does those three things, that has strong leadership, strong integrations within their local utility, the local business community, and really listens to the citizens and uses that data to create new services and transform that citizen-city relationship, that's as good as we're going to get. And that's going to take different things to all different cities. In some, it means transportation. In others, it means climate change. In still others, it means using local resources more efficiently. I think that all of those are equally wonderful opportunities.
Jason, you've been working on this for a while now. Do you see that this is becoming the conversation point among more and more communities?
Yeah. I mean, I think that we're excited about the momentum that has been building. We've been doing this for about 5 years now. And when we started, it was about helping cities build awareness. Over the last couple of years, it's been about helping them plan. We're now focusing on how can we help them get financing for these projects? How do we help them build financeable projects that really can get off the ground and move forward? And I think that we've seen big cities as well as little cities start that process. I think some smaller and mid-sized communities actually have an advantage because they're able to get going much quicker with much less bureaucracy, and they can be much in their flatter organizations that have a much more direct connection to the communities.
Well,
so
Jason,
we're excited about that.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jason Nelson is Executive Director of the Smart Cities Council, which is a network of companies that help cities become more sustainable, livable, and workable. This Hour of the Morning Show is produced by Michael Derringer, Keely Baltina, and Colleen Leahy. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this conversation comes to you on the Ideas Network.